Chapter 36.
I have been away for only 2 weeks, but it was enough to bring it home to me afresh that working in the high country had something for me that was missing elsewhere. My first visit took me up on one of the narrow, unfenced roads which join Sildale and Cosdale, and when I had ground my way to the top in bottom gear, I did what I so often did, pulled the car onto the roadside turf and got out. That quotation about not having time to stand and stare had never applied to me. I seem to have spent a good part of my life, probably too much, in just standing and staring. And I was at it again this morning. From up here you could see over the plain of York to the sprawl of the Hambledon Hills, 40 miles to the east, while behind me the ragged miles of moorland rolled away, dipping and rising over the flat fell top. In my year at Darrowby I must have stood here scores of times, and the views across the plain always looked different. Sometimes in the winter the low country was a dark trough between the snow-covered Pennines and the distant white gleam of the Hambledons. And in April the rain squalls drifted in slow, heavy veils across the great green and brown dappled expanse. There was a day, too, when I stood in brilliant sunshine, looking down over miles of thick fog like a rippling layer of cotton wool, with dark tufts of trees and hilltops pushing through here and there. But today, the endless patchwork of fields slumbered in the sun, and the air even on the hill was heavy with the sense of summer. There must be people working among the farms down there, I knew, but I couldn't see a living soul. And the peace, which I always found in the silence and emptiness of the moors, filled me utterly. At these times I often seemed to stand outside myself, calmly assessing my progress. It was easy to flick back over the years, right back to the time I had decided to become a veterinary surgeon. I could remember the very moment. I was 13, and I was reading an article about careers for boys in the Meccano magazine, and as I read I felt a surging conviction that this was for me. And yet, what was it based on? Only that I liked dogs and cats and didn't care much for the idea of an office life. It seemed a frail basis on which to build a career. I knew nothing about agriculture, or about farm animals, and though, during the years in college, I learnt about these things, I could see only one future for myself. I was going to be a small animal surgeon. This lasted right up to the time I qualified. A kind of vision of treating people's pets in my own animal hospital, where everything would be not just modern, but revolutionary. The fully equipped operating theatre, laboratory and x-ray room. They had all stayed crystal clear in my mind until I had graduated MR/CBS. How on earth, then, did I come to be sitting on a high Yorkshire moor in shirt sleeves and Wellingtons, smelling vaguely of cows? The change in my outlook had come quite quickly, in fact, almost immediately after my arrival in Darrowby. The job had been a godsend in those days of high unemployment, but only, I had thought, a stepping stone to my real ambition. But everything had switched round, almost in a flash. Maybe it was something to do with the incredible sweetness of the air which still took me by surprise when I stepped out into the old wild garden at Skeldale House every morning. Or perhaps the daily piquancy of life in the graceful old house with my gifted but mercurial boss, Siegfried, and his reluctant student brother, Tristan. Or it could be that it was just the realization that treating cows and pigs and sheep and horses had a fascination I had never even suspected. And this brought with it a new concept of myself as a tiny wheel in the great machine of British agriculture. There was a kind of solid satisfaction in that. Probably it was because I hadn't dreamt that there was a place like the Dales. I hadn't thought it possible that I could spend all my days in a high, clean-blown land, where the scent of grass or trees was never far away, and where, even in the driving rain of winter, I could snuff the air and find the freshness of growing things hidden somewhere in the cold clasp of the wind. Anyway, it had all changed for me, and my work consisted now of driving from farm to farm across the roof of England, with a growing conviction that I was a privileged person. I got back into the car and looked at my list of visits. It was good to be back, and the day passed quickly. It was about 7 o'clock in the evening when I thought I had finished, that I had a call from Terry Watson, a young farm worker who kept 2 cows of his own. One of them, he said, had summer mastitis. Mid-July was a bit early for this, but in the later summer months we saw literally hundreds of these cases. In fact, a lot of the farmers called it August bag. It was an unpleasant condition because it was just about incurable, and usually resulted in a cow losing a quarter. That's the area of the udder which supplies each teat with milk, and sometimes even her life. Terry Watson's cow looked very sick. She had limped in from the field at milking time, swinging her right hind leg wide to keep it away from the painful udder, and now she stood trembling in her stall, her eyes staring anxiously in front of her. I drew gently at the affected teat, and instead of milk, a stream of dark, foul-smelling serum spurted into the tin can I was holding. "No mistaking that stink, Terry," I said. "It's the real summer type, all right." I felt my way over the hot, swollen quarter, and the cow lifted a leg quickly as I touched the tender tissue. "Pretty hard, too. Looks bad, I'm afraid."